you for the last 22 years for making the morning until 4 in the afternoon. We learned that Smith's best hours are between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m., but I've never seen him between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. We learned that James Quinn is brilliant at all hours, and also that none of you are handicappers, he told us. You were just implementing the methodology. Have you all read James Quinn's book? For the first 50 pages, it is absolutely. That's it, right. I think actually that's the first 44 it falls apart. There is a misconception going about, and that is that if you want to apply the essence of this methodology to its highest point, you must be able to properly assess the daily variance. There can be automatic programs that will approximate an accurate daily variance. And for those who play en masse in Las Vegas or who play with a kind of a casual attitude, not toward handicapping, but to the outcome of a given race, as I do, preferring the, what's his name, Cal Worthington approach, which is the volume deal, making a little bit on a lot, then the application of an accurate daily variance becomes less important. But for those of you who want to truly make or augment a living from handicapping, your Brohammer variance service still is your optimal way to go. And it's only available to people in California and Nevada who play California track. So if you are going to be deluded in any way into thinking that synergism, as absolutely magnificent and powerful a tool as it is going to in any way supplement or supplant, I should say, the Brohammer variance service, you will be in for a disappointment. A, the most important thing from a Quinn standpoint, you will not know how the hell you got the force, and that's going to bother a lot of people. Because if you want to do something automatic, you could have done it with UltraScan, but most people, a lot of people, let's say, rejected UltraScan. Because while it was getting winners, they had no idea why. If you want to know why you're getting winners, then you either must learn to make a daily variant a la the Brohammer concept, or you must use a correct one. If you're too lazy to do it yourself, use one that's available. Because Brohammer's variant is not just a daily variant. When I say Brohammer, our variant, Brohammer manages to send out. He makes a projected time variant, which is art. One's a science, the other is an art. Most people who took the variant service took it because while they could have implemented the scientific aspect of it, they could not duplicate the art, which comes in many years of Thomas spending studying the concept and mastering it. So I don't care whether anyone buys synergism or not. It's available and it's good. We got a report, the long distance report from Las Vegas yesterday, where it's being implemented, where they swept the board in five different tracks. Where they swept the board means that they were called in afterwards with a broom to help clean up because they lost so much money during the weekend. Or whether they won all the races, I'll have yet to find out. But still, the difference will be noticeable, especially for those who concentrate on a given track and who will put fairly good sums of money to back their and their computer's judgment. They want to make a living at this. So I don't want anyone to go away with the feeling that they felt that the Institute or PERCO was saying that synergism is that automatic, that it will duplicate a well-derived and very difficultly derived daily variance service. It will not. Will approximate it to a degree, to a greater degree than anything we have yet produced, but it will not, I assure you, duplicate it. If anyone who thinks that I said that or implied that, please make that correction in your mind.
Sir?
Can they be used in combination?
Oh, certainly.
Oh, good.
Certainly. Okay. Synergism has an opening for Tom's variant. That's the optimal way to use it. But you can't, if you want to play as I do, run around the country. You see, I cannot use Tom's variant. Mm-hmm. I cannot use synergism in effect unless a mass of our people get it. I have to use the least technologically advanced program there is. I can't tell someone in Duluth that I'm a winner if I'm using artificial devices that are supplied to me by a third source. So I have to be able to take the same minimal tools and win 75-80% of the races, or else I forfeited my right to stand up here and be the first speaker.
What type of synergism is it? Meta-free or ultra-scan?
No, synergism is an advanced, it is the consummate advanced phase 3.
Phase 3.
What it does is to try to eliminate from your realm the necessity of making any kind of adjustment or knowing how to make an adjustment.
And what's the price?
Well, we'll talk about it. You're obviously a retailer.
Here's a way to getting right to the bottom of it.
We're not a price organization. We're a therapeutic organization. If you want an operation,
you should discuss it with a nurse. You have to know how much a program costs.
That's right.
See, but you don't go to a medical convention and say, "Hey, doc, how much for appendectomy?" Medical orientation. Doctors never discuss it.
Right.
Except maybe on the golf course on Wednesday.
Oh, no. I go to the doctor. I tell him, I said, "Now look, what's the diagnosis? This." I said, What do you think will be the cost of making an operation? I want to know the cost of
it. You don't have to do it in convention.
Oh, you say, okay, we'll discuss this matter.
That's right.
I'll ask your insurance.
Ask my nurse.
And that.
Ask the nurse.
Well, I never saw the doc squirm, folks.
I'll tell him it's $600.
Doctors, I'll take Wednesdays off, you know, and I just read a report for the United States Health Service. In the United States, fewer people die on Wednesday than any other day of the week. Yeah. Unless you're on the doctors, then the golf course, you get immediate attention. You know, it's a very diet of the golf course. It's drive one, drag carry, drive two. We are privileged today to have with us James Quinn and Tom Brohammer. Difference being hardback and coil bound.
Jim and I resolved that over happy dinner.
What did you get your contract?
Well, he was envious now because my pages are bigger.
Everybody is trying to take Tom away from us. Dick Mitchell to try to get him published. Cynthia Publishing for 2 years now. It's a nice little gig. Puts him number one in his book, Big Big Winner. Tom Brohammer. He says, "What a pity that Tom has never published anything." Parentheses, except in the context of the sarcasm. And he really should. So you get good to people. You know what happens?
You just can't.
The neighbors are all want to take it from you. You get a good maid, you know, the neighbors are over there borrowing a cup of sugar and saying, "Hey, what are you doing?" It's a terrible world. James Quinn has pointed out something very interesting. This something you should know. And that is, in the beginning, in the early days of handicapping literature, and still prevails in certain areas, all the people who were allegedly experts, or who could put three or four words together in a book, were swiping at each other, and they hated each other, and they said dirty things about each other. And they relegated the handicapping fraternity to a bunch of backstabbing, side-swiping, out of the side of the mouth type individuals. And it still goes on. Still goes on, and we hear from people say, "I was at a lecture by XX the other day, he said your damn thing wasn't worth it. It was garbage." And it still goes on because those people are still living in that mentality. But something happened in 1983 when the first handicapping expo, which I wasn't invited, of course, you had only the real experts.
Nobody's immune here.
And but the spirit of Tom Ainsley, who was until recently the most literate of all of the handicapping authorities, his spirit was, hey, there are some of us who are credible people, some of us who are legitimate, and we should, he didn't make this a rule or say, let's all sign articles of confederation, but he said, we should learn to respect the other's discipline and the other's feeling to understand it, not necessarily to put it into practice. And we should become a fraternity of professionals within a professional code of ethics. Well, Ainsley then got ill, and the spearheading of that movement was taken over by James Quinn, who was, in his very gentleness and intellectual intent, has permeated the entire industry with his own honor and integrity. And now we do have a small coterie of persons who are regarded as expert, who have great mutual respect for each other. And that is why you will find a James Quinn at one of our seminars, or us going to somebody else's, and a mutual respect. And it's for the betterment of all of you and all the others out there who seek to become winners, that there should not be this divisive era of viciousness at the top. But if a man is vicious, it's very difficult for you, it would seem to me, to want to follow him or follow the dictums of what he is saying is true. Because you cannot win with viciousness, you must win with a total openness of mind to the realities. And one of the great realities is that there is no, should be no paranoia that I'm superior and everybody else must be inferior. There's a many, many ways to skin this cat. James Quinn will share one with us today which we can adapt to this methodology very easily. We can get him to talk English. He talks like those handicaps, 111 and 1. And everybody looked at him, what's 111 and 1? Somebody said, well, that's 5649. Get him. Clean up his language, you'll understand how to use it. We've said in the past, and it's true, but it's not an indictment, that you cannot mix a lot of other methodologies with this one. Because in so mixing them, you not only destroy the effectiveness of this one, you destroy the effectiveness of the other. And that would apply to Ainsley's private method, to Scott's procedures, and to most of the others. Andy Byers, of course, would be it's a one or the other. It's a dichotomy. You can't, you know, be a speed handicapper and assign speed points. You have to use a feet per second methodology. That does not make, it's not an indictment. That's merely warning people, don't try to take this whole thing and put it in a big pot and stir it and think that the result is going to be any better than the single use of any one of the other people's applications or ours. A lot of people have flattered us by utilizing some of our material in their own. Some have even mentioned it. One person said, if you're going to be at the top, you've got to expect everybody to steal from you. I don't mind them stealing from us. What I do object to is that they don't back it up with any documentation or tell you how to do it. They just give you a bunch of numbers, and then if they go wrong, they say, oh, they're really Sartin's numbers. If they go right, then they're numbers. They're improvement. The whole thing about this methodology, in case you had not guessed it, is not the numbers. The numbers are fairly good. The methodologies are fairly good. But what you're doing right now is the secret to your success with this or any methodology. It is the inner relationship and the inner communication between those who use something, who believe in it, and to the degree that that causes them to believe in themselves, that is where the success comes. Your belief in yourself is what makes the methodology work. The methodology in itself does not work. The methodology gives you five horses who have a good chance of winning the race, or four, or three who aren't running you enter. If you enter the wrong ones, the methodology is not going to help you. If you make the wrong interpretation, the methodology is not going to help you. So you, really, it is you who are the strength of this or any other methodology. Your belief. To the skeptical man, I can guarantee I can make him lose the risk. To the believer, I guarantee I can make him live 60 feet using precisely the same procedure. So it is that whatever the methodology infuses into the human nature is what makes it work. So if you merely take one of our programs and go out and market it without trying to infuse anybody with a sense of I will win or determination, then all you've done is steal trash. Because that's all a computer program is. It's just a highly technically organized piece of trash. You're a good audience. Time. Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. Right. You can come anytime.
Right.
Now, did you all get your books?
Yeah.
Good. We're going to study the subject in class today in its entirety. And we're also going to have at the end of this meeting an open question and answer session, not only directed to the subject of the class, but to any subject, as we did yesterday. One way to James Quincock, is that all he thinks of this? He gets frozen. He's only got 32 pages, no one.
I like the first 10 pages.
We're going to take class from its most ancient aspect to its most contemporary and try to offer you kind of a synthesis of what you can do with all of it. And it's very, very, we urge much caution in this. There's a tendency among all of us, as well as the people out in the public who we expect it of, to draw rash conclusions from a given statement. Somebody says, I don't use ABV anymore. Oh, Tom Brover doesn't use ABV. Let's throw away ABV. When you can duplicate Grohammer's performance, then you should imitate his style, not before. You have to take everything in the context of what does he do, what insights does he have, says he doesn't have to do this. What's his attitude on what races he would play as opposed to what I would play? And I'm not singling Tom. There's always somebody in our group who says, I don't use that crap. Bro, Purdy's the worst. In fact, I'm trying to find what he does, but I don't use that. Now, this is very funny to the sophisticated and the esoteric, but to the poor guy who's just getting started, I can give you an example. William Quirin wrote a book and he had some things in it. And Mitchell, who you all know, is reaching the point of excellence of his own, that he's an expert now. But when he first met Quirin, he was struggling, even more than many of us when we were just starting. He was really struggling because he wanted manna from heaven, he wanted wisdom from the greats. He discussed one of Quirin's things with him, and Quirin stops him in the middle and says, I don't use that anymore. And he was crushed. So that's the same thing that all of us face. Just because one of our people says, I don't use that anymore, does not destroy its applicability by all of us. There's a couple of things in the yellow manual, and all of you know about it, because there are no newcomers here today. We had a couple, yes? There's a couple of things in the yellow manual that have been stricken, or at least have an agenda for the new people telling them to avoid it. And one of them is averaging baselines. In the yellow manual, it said averaging was dangerous at best, but the reason it was in there, the ability to average, was because at the time, the popular thinking of handicapping, led by such experts as, and I used to read with them, ever meeting these people in person was like meeting, you know, Clark Gable. Well, in your age, it would have been like Brock Hudson.
You are basically a bad person.
But some of them were saying, some of the experts, we're saying that the way you get a baseline was to average the two best or three best, the best three in the last 60 days. And I said, these guys must be experts here. They got books and hardbacks of them. So I tried it and it wasn't bad. So I said, but I did discern that averaging was dangerous at best, which I put in there. But everybody did. What's funny People who can't understand the methodology can find every damn mistake that I made in that manual. You ever notice that? They can't. All the good things it says. I didn't read that. But you said over here, averaging. I didn't say that averaging is dangerous at best. It said, how do I average? You don't let me average. Don't average. Forget it. Secondarily, what we did was we suggested, not in the manual. The manual still has it in its puristic form, how to make a class adjustment. There are people who read it in its puristic form who are elderly, unimaginative, non-intuitive, and all those other things, who are doing very well, 63-64% day in, day out, who are making the class adjustments. My brilliant associates decided they would no longer make class adjustments, and bowing to their superior ability, which I saw demonstrated, I said, well, let's stop making class adjustments. Let's note what the class adjustment would have been, and then visually, intuitively, intellectually apply it without making any change in the numbers so that we would be able to see what the horse really did without the implementation of human impression. Well, that was confusing to some people because they didn't want to think or they did not want to look at their perspective as opposed to an actual alteration of numbers. For those of you who must see numbers change, who must have it on top in the numbers, make a class adjustment just the way we originally did. You will lose some races that you would have won, but on the other hand, you will win some races that not making adjustment would appear to be losers because the numbers aren't altered. So let's go back to the essence of class from the classical point of view and take it to its ultimate extreme, which would be the Quinn concept, which we somewhat impudently started adapting to the methodology without real permission, tacit permission. And James Quinn has not exactly put his official stamp of approval on it. There was no rubber, but he says, yeah, that's okay to explore. Let's explore. So what we will be talking about here is explorations of how to apply it. And he's not going to say it's all right unless he sees the evidence. So we're going to supply him with the evidence that we can A, adapt the whole procedure to the methodology simplistically, not with a whole lot of extra work, and B, that we can, and this is where the jury is very much out, that we can supplant the second aspect of this. He calls it a method. He gets everyone confused yesterday. He's going on how great this method is. He's talking about his. He's going to use the word method, and we're going to use methodology. So when he says method, he's talking about classical field application. He's talking about methodology. He's talking about the method being merged with the methodology. See, people say we've made great contributions to handicapping. Now, that's not true. We have made a great contribution to the language of handicapping. There are no more systems. Everybody has a method or a methodology. Have you noticed that? You ever get a thing from a system seller anymore? They're all methods. Every one of them is a method. Well, that's what they call it. The problem is the public cannot pronounce methodology. They say mythology.
And $10,000 a day. Don't forget that. $10,000 a day to use my system. Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah.
Oh, well, we don't have one.
In the front page, if you use it properly, they underline properly. What I say, $10,000 a day.
On a $2 bet.
Yes. I don't know how many of those you bought, but I used to buy those things. It came as a great shock to me.
I have a friend who buys it for me. He's a lawyer. He has the money.
You're a closet user.
And I'm, yeah, and I say, and he comes to me for, what do you think about this? I look, I said,
hey, give us his name and address. We'll send him one of you. How much does he want to make? Well, I got a little print machine. I'll say $20,000 a day. So let's start with the classic. And it goes back to Pittsburgh Phil and Dowse. Remember John Saunders Dowse? What was his first name? He found that the earnings per start was the most
predictive of all things back in the 20s and 30s. Short racing seasons, not too much traveling from track to track, and the breeding industry was, of course, nothing like it is today. And the more the horse earned, the better it seemed to perform. And then people were observing following earnings per start, the proficiency of in-the-money finishes, the horse's consistent ability to be first, second, third, or even fourth, or they say fourth and fifth, but mostly first, second, and third. That means that a horse was always up there in contention relative to that percentage factor. Then, APV, what purchase did that horse do well at? He ran at a much higher purse level than the others. And all three of those had popularity by themselves, and at one time or another were the substance or the backbone of a specific methodology which employed nothing but one or the other of those. We did what we said was, if the three of them are that good, let's find a way to weight them and use all three relative to their statistical probability, which is why we gave you the formula for class in the beginning, and which is Dick Schmidt has kind of adapted, ameliorated a little bit, altered slightly just to make it a little bit better. But the problem with those who put out such methods, and the problem with those who in subsequent years have criticized it, is that they all think in terms of hertz. They're all one-itis people. The number one horse in that category, how often does it win? It's all number one, number one. That is the problem with almost every statistic that is provided with the devotee of horse race handicap. We can tell you right now that the number one in any of those categories is not a positive expectancy event. The number one in APV, for instance, is 12%. The number one in earnings per start is 23%. The number one in percentage of finishes in the money is 28%. None of those methods would produce you more than 28% were you to play the number one horse. Now, to a nation with one-itis who thinks they're cheating at some game if they bet two horses or more, it could have no possible advantage and should be discarded, as many experts say they should be discarded. However, and I'm not going to steal Dick's thunder here, if you take the top four of any of those categories, you have a positive proficiency. Now the question is distinguishing between which one of the top four and how to use that statistic to your benefit. And that's what the original class rating, which Dick has supplemented with a formula that's been tested around the country, did. APV has a power, yet that if we ignore it, it's going to cost us some money. And that is in predicting the place horse. We have many examples of what APV can do to the place horse. We have, for instance, in our last trip to Nebraska, a week ago today it was, we went to the track. There were 11 races, two of which were maiden. We played nine then. And virtually every one of those nine races, and I'm not sure if it wasn't all of those nine races, the place horse was pinpointed by looking at APV. APV did not make the horse place. APV caused us to look at it. When you see a bunch of numbers on the page, you suddenly see 187. Turn to page three. You suddenly see 187 or 248 or 303. This is supposed to be like waving a red bull flag in front of a bull. It's supposed to say, oops. A couple is not here today. I went to the track with them on the 12th of June. In the first race, I believe it was. Well, it was second race. This is it. It's on this page. Second race, I said, you guys do your APVs? I said, let me see it. The first thing I see, 187. I said, get up. Where are you going? I'm going to go to bed at the play. Well, maybe you can put any numbers through. I don't care. But it was not an exact race. Dick will tell you that we were in Las Vegas in a six-horse field. One horse look at 247% of PERS. What are you going to do? I'm going to bet it. You're going to get money. The winner's, the favorite's going to win 2 or 3, and the place is going to pay 380. I don't care. It's going to place, so we'll get 380. Well, it turns out the winner didn't pay the huge exactly. So because we, you know, it's one of those situations. It might not have had the favorite won, but the favorite didn't win. In fact, I think that horse, the horse under it won. It was also over the first. The favorite was under the first. The key to the exact. Now, look at this, these two pages. And I'll ask our purists, is there anything about Nantree's past performances that would cause you to bet it twice? Or if it were any, pretend it's an exact rate, or would put it automatically in your exact rate? Any, I say purist, you're not supposed to be doing your crossword.